Suppose that a man in his illness emancipates two slaves, the price of one being 300 dirhams, and that of the other 500 dirhams. The one for 300 dirhams dies, leaving a daughter. Then the master dies, leaving a daughter likewise. And the slave leaves property to the amount of 400 dirhams. With how much must everyone ransom himself? That confusing mathematical problem is a quotation from a text written in the early 9th century and describes an exercise in calculating inheritance. The book, originally written in Arabic, is known throughout the world by its title Kitab al-Jabr, the Book of Completion. Its author is the subject of this essay, a medieval polymath by the name of Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi, a name I first encountered during history lessons while at school in Iraq. In his book, he sets out for the first time the subject of algebra, a word derived directly from the title of the book, as a subfield of mathematics in its own right. Al-Khwarizmi was born around 780 AD, and his name suggests that he was originally from Khwarizm, a province of Uzbekistan in Central Asia. Little is known about his life, but we do know that he came to Baghdad in the early 9th century, which was by then the capital of the vast Islamic empire, ruled over by the powerful Abbasid dynasty. He was employed by the Caliph al-Ma'mun, a man obsessed with translation of Greek texts into Arabic, and one of the greatest patrons of science and scholarship in history. Al-Khwarizmi worked in the Caliph's almost mythical House of Wisdom, a centre of translation and original scholarship, which attracted some of the greatest minds of the time, during a period that has become known as the Golden Age of Arabic science. The term Arabic, I should add, is because of the language the many influential texts were written in, the official language of the empire, the language of the Quran. The scientific texts covered fields as diverse as philosophy, medicine, mathematics, optics, and astronomy. Of the great scientific achievements of this period, I'll focus on a few directly associated with the work of Al-Khwarizmi. Sometime during the second decade of the 9th century, al-Ma'mun ordered the building of the first astronomical observatories in Baghdad. And so it was that over a period of 1 or 2 years, the first critical appraisal of Greek astronomy began in earnest. During this time, many observations of the sun and moon were made by a group of scholars overseen by Al-Khwarizmi. And a table with longitudes and latitudes of 24 fixed stars is recorded as having been drawn up at the time. Al-Ma'mun then ordered the creation of a second observatory on the slopes of Mount Qasyun overlooking Damascus to carry out further measurements. On completion of the work, Al-Khwarizmi produced a new zij, or star chart, for the caliph. Another spectacular project undertaken by this group of scholars was even more ambitious. In his great work, The Geographia, the Greek astronomer Ptolemy included all that was known about the geography of the world at the time. His work had been translated into Arabic and seems to have been the key text that triggered the early Islamic interest in geography. Al-Ma'mun commanded the production of a new map of the world. After all, Ptolemy's map didn't include important Islamic cities such as Mecca or the capital Baghdad. The former hadn't been important enough, and the latter hadn't existed. Al-Khwarizmi and his colleagues worked out the distance between these two cities by taking measurements during a lunar eclipse. Their value was correct to better than 2% when compared with the modern one. They then began to recalculate the coordinates of many of the major landmarks in the known world. For example, their map depicted the Atlantic and Indian Oceans as open bodies of water, not landlocked seas, as Ptolemy had suggested. In producing his famous Picture of the Earth treatise, Al-Khwarizmi secured his legacy as the first geographer of Islam. It was completed in 833, the year of al-Ma'mun's death, and contained tables of latitudes and longitudes of over 500 cities. It grouped locations under five general headings: towns, rivers, mountains, seas, and islands, each in tables ordered from south to north, and each with its precise coordinates in degrees and even minutes of arc. But all this work pales when held up against Al-Khwarizmi's achievements in mathematics. His treatise on Hindu numerals introduced the Muslim world to the decimal number system. His great work on arithmetic, the Book of Addition and Subtraction, according to the Hindu calculation, written around 825, no longer exists in the original Arabic. In fact, even this title is a guess. But it was probably the first book on the decimal system to be translated into Latin. It begins with the words Dixit Algorithmi, or Al-Khwarizmi says. It goes on to describe the procedure for various computational instructions and is the origin of the word algorithm, derived, of course, from the Latinized name of Al-Khwarizmi. Actually, this and other early translations of his work met with much opposition in a Europe submerged deep in its dark ages and were often referred to as dangerous Saracen magic. His greatest work, though, is undoubtedly that wonderful book on algebra. Al-Khwarizmi was originally a Zoroastrian, an ancient Persian religion, who we think converted to Islam. On the very first page of his Al-Jabr, he begins with the line Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of God the most gracious and compassionate, with which all books written by Muslims begin even to this day. But of course it could have been that Al-Khwarizmi was simply following tradition and didn't wish to offend the caliph whose patronage he enjoyed. What Al-Khwarizmi did in this book was to bring together obscure mathematical rules known only to the few and turn them into an instruction manual for solving problems that crop up in a wide range of everyday situations, from inheritance to trade and agriculture. One can't help but admire the concerted effort on the part of Islamic mathematicians who came after Al-Khwarizmi in promoting and sealing his reputation, a PR job that was helped further because of the impact his book then had on Europe. It was translated into Latin in the 12th century, not once, but twice, by the Englishman Robert of Chester and the Italian Gerard of Cremona. His work was also known to Fibonacci, the greatest European mathematician of the Middle Ages, who quotes Al-Khwarizmi in his great work of 1202, Liber Abaci. Of course, we should be careful not to credit Al-Khwarizmi with inventing a discipline just because the name we use for it today, algebra, originates from the title of his book. For example, it's known that Greek and Babylonian mathematicians were solving algebraic equations long before Al-Khwarizmi. And what of the contribution of early individuals such as the great Greek mathematician Diophantus, or Hindu mathematicians like Brahmagupta? Do these men not have an equally worthy claim to the title? I would argue not. Al-Khwarizmi made it clear that his book was intended as an instruction manual for manipulating quantities algebraically. But his motivation went beyond this. He describes at the start that the purpose of his book is to teach what is easiest and most useful in arithmetic, such as men constantly require in cases of inheritance, legacies, partition, lawsuits and trade, and in all their dealings with one another, or where the measurement of lands, the digging of canals, geometrical computations and other objects of various sorts and kinds are concerned. The book is divided into two halves. As a theoretical physicist, the first half is of much more interest to me, for this is where Al-Khwarizmi lays down the rules of algebra and the sequences of steps, the algorithms, needed to solve different kinds of equations, each followed by a diagrammatic proof of his answer. The second half of the book is full of applications of his methods and is where he tackles a wide range of everyday problems such as the ones I've just described. But this book is unlike any other on algebra one would find today. Rather than fill his pages with symbols and equations, he wrote entirely in prose. This did, of course, mean that it took him two pages to explain the steps necessary to compute a quantity, a process that could be stated in just a few lines using symbolic algebra. Now, if I tell you that both Diophantus and the Hindu mathematicians, long before Al-Khwarizmi, were using rudimentary symbols to describe their equations, that Al-Khwarizmi in his algebra never solved problems beyond the quadratic, that Diophantus tackled more complex problems, and that even the techniques Al-Khwarizmi used, such as the method of completing the square to solve a quadratic equation, were not new, then surely in the light of all this, the argument championing his claim evaporates. I've heard it said that the reason for Al-Khwarizmi's reputation is simply because his was the first book that popularised the subject and set it in a form that could be followed by many people. But this is a feeble argument. One might just as well say that Stephen Hawking's reputation as one of the greatest scientists of the modern era is due to his best-selling A Brief History of Time, rather than his pioneering research in cosmology and his theories of black holes. In fact, the issue really has nothing to do with whether or not symbols are used, whether or not there are geometric proofs, the level of complexity of the equations, or the accessibility of the writing. What Al-Khwarizmi did for the very first time, and what sets him apart from all other mathematicians before him, is subtle but crucial. He abandons the practice of solving particular problems and instead provides a general series of principles and rules for dealing with them, solving equations in a set of steps, the algorithm. He thus made it possible for algebra to exist as a subject in its own right, rather than just a technique for manipulating numbers. It's the difference between, on the one hand, supplying lots of specific examples and leaving the reader to conclude that the same procedure works on similar ones, and on the other hand, explaining the procedure in general terms in its own right. Al-Khwarizmi may use specific numbers that illustrate the method later, but the method itself is conceived as a general procedure. Thus, although Al-Khwarizmi uses words rather than symbols, as Diophantus did, his, in fact, is much closer to the sort of algebra we do today than the Greeks. Al-Khwarizmi died around 850 AD, but his status as the man who created a new sub-discipline of mathematics to sit alongside arithmetic and geometry had already been secured. One of the world's most renowned historians of science, George Sarton, is best known for writing a multi-volume reference book called The Introduction to the History of Science. In it, he divides up world history going back to the 6th century BC into half-century chapters, each named after the most important scientist of that age, anywhere in the world. The period between 800 and 850 AD is referred to as the time of Al-Khwarizmi.